Today we'll be discussing eye design in insects, which, as you can see in this particularly amazing looking robber fly, can be diverse, fantastic, and just plain cool. So the discussion is going to be addressing how insect vision can work, particularly with regard to how the eyes can enable insects to do all the amazing things they do. So a big part of this is function. Insects need to deal with the visual world. This can require using color cues to find food sources, and vision clearly is often necessary for finding mates, chasing off rivals, detecting moving prey in the case of predators. And these visual cues can be, you know, absolutely essential for finding oviposition sites and for maintaining a circadian rhythm, day-night cycle, etc. To perform these functions, the visual organs that insects possess must receive information and then convey that information to the brain, which then processes the visual world. So in terms of insect vision, there can be a lot of different ways that are visual types of visual organs that insects have evolved to be able to do this. So in the visual system of insects can come in many forms, but the three primary types that they use are the compound eyes, the ocelli, and structures called the stomata. So as you can see in this particular display, you can see some gorgeous compound eyes in this dragonfly here. Also, compound eyes as well as these circled ocelli here in this paper wasp, and then the stomata are highlighted down here in this larva. So the insect visual organs, as we mentioned in the previous slide, are divided into the compound eyes, ocelli, and stomata. The compound eyes are the large paired structures, which normally we just call them the eyes. They're usually on either side of the head, and they're composed of many units called ommatidia. These ommatidia are actually individual cartridges, and they have cuticle, support cells, photoreceptors, which are the actual cells in the insect or in many other organisms that detect light, and other cells called pigment cells, and we'll address that a little bit later. The ocelli, on the other hand, also have photoreceptors as well as our structures with cuticle and support cells, but they're also single lens eyes, often located on the top of the head, which are indicated here in this display, pointing to ocelli, and this particular little damselfly right here. And finally, there is one other class, which we'll address quickly, which are in mostly holometabolous larvae, which are stomata, located on either side of the head. They're also single lens eyes. I will have to point out that there are even some other types of visual organs or structures on different other organisms or different other insects, where sometimes they're even located on the genitalia of some males, etc. So insects can have some sort of light detecting organs all over their body, but mostly they're located on their head. So the objectives of this particular lecture is to understand the layout of the compound eye, ask what are the components of this eye, and address the diversity of eye designs and their adaptations, which ultimately ties into this whole idea of function and what does vision do. So in terms of ommatidia and the layout of the compound eye, you have hugely diverse systems going on here. You have tiny structures to obviously almost, you know, no structure in ants, and then also, which ranges all the way over to this particular tabanid or horsefly, where the eye, the compound eye, actually takes up almost the entirety of the head. You can have various different colors, various different pigments, which you can see in this damselfly and this parasitoid wasp. And in this particular case of the praying mantis, you can even see there's variations of which particular ommatidia could be facing you at any point in time. So considering this diversity of different types of systems, what is the underlying structure to enable all of this to happen? Well, with these different types of systems, there's generally this amazing regular structure that is laid out across the different types of compound eyes. They can range from tens of thousands of facets to single facets, all called individually ommatidia, and, you know, can actually include double eyes, which, you know, in the case of the whirligig beetle or the gyrinid beetles, they actually have different eyes for living in, you know, that faces above water or below water. And all of these different types of compound eye designs have the basic regular structure of a regular latticework array, often at the top of the surface, a hexagonal array, which you can see in this this display, of cartridges, which all sort of face outward into the world. You can see sort of a nice close-up right here of a Drosophila or a vinegar fly eye, where it's actually very nice, amazing, regular sort of lattice work. The basic structure is that, in particular, the apposition eye, which is a fairly one of the two main common eye designs, is that photoreceptors, which are, as I said earlier, the cells that actually detect the light and signal the light information from the outside in, the photoreceptors form the core of each omatidium. In this case, each of those little cartridges that you had seen before is represented here. And each of these photoreceptors, there can be up to 8 or 9 photoreceptors located at the center here, forming a tube-like array. They're also called retinula cells, by the way. And the photoreceptors have fine microvilli, or little sort of finger-like structures, which extend into the middle of each facet. So imagine right through the middle core there that you see in this close-up of a single cartridge. There's actually these fine little fingers, which forms this area is called the rhabdome of the eye, which is where the light detection actually happens. But in many insects, this structure of the apposition eye, which includes bees and flies and many beetles, as well as, you know, various other insects, the photoreceptors form the core of the cartridge, but they're surrounded by what are called pigment cells. And these pigment cells can actually block the light from going across cartridges. So just imagine, more or less, any light that comes through the lens, or the corneal lens of the photoreceptor, which is at the surface of the eye, the light comes in, it goes through the crystalline cone, which are made up of certain types of Semper cells, which actually help to focus the light or direct the light to the photoreceptors, again indicated with this gray and white sort of structure. So the light comes through, but is actually blocked from going anywhere else outside of this this cartridge by the pigment cells. The pigment cells are there to absorb the light and ensure that the light is directed just to the photoreceptors. So these pigment cells then sort of can act as regulators of how light moves through to the photoreceptors, and how then the photoreceptors themselves signal whether or not light happens. Therefore, what happens is that as light comes through and is progresses through the cartridges of the eye, such as in this case an image is projected through, each individual cartridge picks up a piece of that image. So imagine one cartridge or the next cartridge will pick up a neighboring pieces of that image, and that image is then reconstructed further on in the brain by taking each piece and then sort of bringing it together. So imagine, as you would if you take a photograph of something and it's pixelated. Well, then this is what it's similar. What's with the apposition eye? What is occurring similarly is that basically each cartridge is its own pixel or piece of that particular image of the world. So the neighboring cartridge will have a similar sort of view, and then a cartridge over on the far left or far right will view the world in a different portion of, have a different portion of the view. So with the apposition eye, the world is pieced out, pieced apart, because all the pigment cells go all the way up the entire cartridge. On the other hand, another layout of the actual compound eye is something called the superposition eye. There's many insects that have it, which include also beetles, moths, and butterflies. And in this case, the photoreceptors are located at the base of the eye. So imagine again, there's the outside area of the eye. The light comes in through the corneal lens, as well as the crystalline cone and Semper cells, and there's a few pigment cells. But there's this clear zone that happens right through the middle here. And this particular clear zone allows the light to be able to be projected, and then going through the crystalline cone, actually go across to different photoreceptor groups. So, therefore, the image can be projected within this clear zone across many different photoreceptors and not divided up completely by individual facets of the eye. And this clear zone can be made up of numerous different components, which include just extensions of the photoreceptors that, or at least portions of the photoreceptors that don't detect light, or various other sort of structures. And you should check out Chapman to figure out, there's a diversity of structures that the insects have developed. But in this case, it can actually gather more light. If you imagine, in the case of the superposition eye, if you have very, very low light levels, any light, aka or any photon, is going to be hugely key for you to detect what's going on out there. One way to do that is to actually just gather more more light by opening up your lens. There is a bit of a sacrifice there, though, because then you can decrease your resolution. You can't have as fine a pixelation of the world, which is all about resolution. So, in addition to the basic layout of the apposition versus superposition eye, you can also have arrangements of the photoreceptors within the cartridge that can produce different sort of organizational patterns. So, for example, if we then do a quick cutout where you see this one little line here and examine the closed rhabdome or the open rhabdome, what's represented here are these fine lines, are those microvilli, those finger-like extensions of the photoreceptors. Each photoreceptor is indicated by this sort of triangular shape in the open or closed rhabdome. And so each one of these photoreceptors have their microvilli sort of oriented, and then they're all touching, as you can see in the center. Whereas the open rhabdome, their microvilli aren't touching, all of them. So with this kind of difference, you can also imagine that as light goes through into this cartridge, which is the whole point of being able to detect what's going on outside in the real world, is that as light goes through, the different types of closed rhabdome or open rhabdome can actually detect light in slightly different ways. And it'll become apparent later on how different the systems can be. But a big part of this is all about resolution. So if we return to the same sort of idea of, resolution and pixelation, imagine you have a bunch of little sort of tiny eyes facing the same direction. Now, to increase resolution with particularly the compound eye, you can have a lot of them packed together and all facing the same direction so that they can have really high overlap, meaning they can also have high, can detect whether or not two points that are really close together far away are still two points. Whereas you can have another case where the facets or the omatidia are large and they're facing slightly different ways. So those two points, say, two points in the distance, or may actually just be represented as a big blur. So you can't tell that there are two different points out there. So the ways that insects have sort of adapted and dealt with it is the fact that sometimes certain areas of the eye can have particularly low resolution, meaning there's, the facets face slightly different directions, they have a larger, we call an intra-omatidial angle, which means that the resolution, or the ways to distinguish whether or not two points are resolvable is far more difficult at those regions of the eye where the insect isn't paying attention to so much. Whereas other regions of the eye, which you can see in this gorgeous sort of robber fly, have large facets that all seem to face the same direction. They, in that case, may have a small inter-omatidial angle, meaning these two facets are facing the same direction and can distinguish whether two points are separated or not, therefore higher resolution. So many insects have evolved within the massive compound eye areas that have low resolution and high resolution. And the high resolution areas are similar to what we call the vertebrate fovea, where the intraarterial angle can be low, particularly in the case of dragonflies, sometimes to 1 degree, but the rest of the eye has low resolution. And if you can imagine for humans, when you see something out of the corner of your eye, and then you turn to it, what you're doing is you're seeing something with relatively low resolution out of the corner of your eye, and then you turn your eye to it to be able to focus and then resolve it in the higher regions of your eye. Same thing with insects. But how does this all sort of work? And we won't go into huge amounts of details in terms of how this all works, but in terms of the actual molecular pathways. But the entire idea is to be able to detect what's going on in the visual world is what the eye does across systems, is trying to detect how light is reflected off of objects outside. And to be able to do that, you have to be able to detect photons, or photons arriving at the eye, and then cells have to be excited or inhibited or activated by this arrival of light. And what that process is called is phototransduction, which is a mechanism that involves a series of reactions where a particular molecule, retinol, which oddly enough is related to vitamin A, changes its actual shape with the introduction of light, which means that when photons come in, this particular molecule changes its shape. This conformational change then is associated with, since retinol is actually associated in the membrane with certain proteins, the conformational change in retinol then changes a bunch of different other protein structures involving a G protein cascade. This G protein cascade leads to the opening of channels in individual photoreceptors, and in the case of insects, a depolarization or excitation of the photoreceptors. So light hits this molecule, that changes its conformation. That change in conformation then triggers a huge change of protein conformations, which is a whole chain of events that eventually leads to the cell being excited. And I would definitely look it up in the individual changes in insect structure and function for more details. But when you come to think about the fact that light in itself, even during the day, goes through several log changes in intensity, even going from, you know, bright, sunny outside to shade, you can have huge changes in sort of the amount of light out there in the environment. And, you know, every system seems to have certain ways that they adapt. So insects, in particular, have to deal with this huge range of light conditions even during one day. And these light adaptations can, you know, for example, when they need to deal with strong light, they have something called light adaptation, or dim conditions, dark adaptation. And on the level of the eye, and even on the level of the individual photoreceptor, there's numerous different ways that insects have adapted their eye to be able to, you know, deal with all these different types of light. But of course, there's a lot of these adaptations have to do with being nocturnal or diurnal. So there's a couple of different things. The pigment cells themselves are pretty darn important in this process. The insects can redistribute pigment in the pigment cells, which can take a few minutes or in some cases certain days, but generally or even an hour. In light adapted eyes, what happens is the pigment actually migrates closer to the photoreceptors so that the pigment kind of decreases the amount of photons hitting the photoreceptor so you don't overload the system. As opposed to dark adapted eyes, the pigment can move away from the photoreceptors, allowing more light to come in, and thereby more or less allowing, in this case, you can see the yellow arrows, photons to actually bounce in and enter the photoreceptors themselves. In addition to that, pigment within the photoreceptors can be redistributed to enable the photoreceptors to detect more or less light. And then in a lot of nocturnal insects, they even have added trachea, a type of sort of this amazing structure called a tapetum, located at the back, at the very base or the basal lamina of the photoreceptor cartridge, where this trachea is almost honestly sort of like a mirror. So any photons that get to the back of the eye, or at least the base of the eye, can then also be reflected back up through the entire cartridge. So there's always a chance that photons can escape or not detected by the pigments within the photoreceptor. So one way to increase the chance you'll catch that is by reflecting light back into the cartridge from the back of the eye, and therefore increase sensitivity. Now, clearly the compound eye has this amazing range of properties and capabilities, and obviously it's gorgeous and has numerous adaptations. But there are other types of visual organs called, for example, called the ocelli, which also perform a major role in insects. Ocelli are single lens eyes, normally located at the top of the head, and there's usually three near each other, which you'll see in a lot of different insects. And what you'll see is that they have a single, the corneal lens, they have lots of photoreceptors, which right now is just represented in gray and black, but can be numerous, hundreds of photoreceptors in one location. And they do have pigment cells to be able to sort of filter or some of the light coming through. But the focus of the lens, so the lens, generally can focus the information into the ocelli. The actual focus of the lens indicates, based on various calculations and numerous areas, numerous researchers have found that most ocelli can't form images. Mostly they're thought to be sort of light detectors, the light detect whether it's light on or off. But also because there's three of them, there's a chance that the first two and the third actually can detect changes in the horizon, whether or not the head is being tilted left or right, for example. However, some really exciting recent recordings in dragonfly ocelli have indicated they can be directionally selective. And you can look up this article if you can get a hold of it. But what's exciting about that is that it's not just about detecting light or dark. The ocelli, just like the compound eye, could be involved in detecting motion. And that's been some fairly interesting recent research on how the insect eye could work, as well as the ocelli. And then finally, there are the stomata, which are thought to be, not only are they often just found in the Holometabolus larvae, but they're often thought to be sort of the evolutionarily basic structure that insects then eventually evolve to form eyes. As you can see on this caterpillar larva, these very nice sort of stomata located in a grouping right there at the side of the eye. They, again, are thought to be poorly developed for image formation, but they have a lens. They have a crystalline lens in some cases. They have photoreceptors. They can detect light dark. And in some few insects, such as tiger beetle larvae, they seem to also be fairly directionally selective. They can detect when something's moving over back and forth. So again, stomata could have numerous roles, and as you can imagine. But I would like to highlight one particularly crazy insect. And really this is sort of, just one way that an insect could just be completely coming out of nowhere. And this particular image is a Strepsipteran, which is what the actual order is called, Strepsiptera. It's the twisted wing fly. And what you see on the surface or the eye of this particular male insect here are these, what they're called, eyelets. And these little eyelets may actually be able to form individual images on each little piece. So it almost looks like a cross between a compound eye and ocelli, but it's a little bit of both. And I'd recommend going to Elke Buschbeck's website, and she talks a lot about the amazing structures of the ocelli, as well as this other particular diving beetle larva that has an amazing eye structure as well. Thank you very much.